The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
I'm going to say Joe Theismann.
Out of nowhere, you got it.
Booyah! On the day you said, I don't know if they'll get any. He gets five.
Oh, yeah, that's right, baby. It's playoff time. You got to raise your level. Got to get laser focused. Be ready. Take it up to 110%. That's what I did last week.
You did?
Yes, five for five. What's up, man? Chris Sims, Paulie Burmeister, Chris Sims unbuttoned. It's the Monday after week 17. We got the playoffs coming.
You were so good on last week
right.
on the quarterback Jeopardy.
Right.
It was so unexpected. As I was driving home, I was starting to think maybe there was some kind of conspiracy. Maybe there was some help. Maybe there were some assists.
This constant disrespect. One, you're an idiot. You won't get him right. Now you got him right, and you must have cheated. Holy crap.
I'm watching Florio too much. There's always a conspiracy theory with everything
he has. Don't do that. Yes.
Maybe there's something to that.
Yes.
Yeah. Week later, congrats.
Okay, thanks.
No QB Jeopardy today.
No. We got a lot to talk about, but that was good. It was good. And your text messages after were funny, where you were like, I'm proud of you, but yet disappointed.
little bit of both.
Yeah, a little bit of both. So either
way. Proud. So how was it yesterday here watching games with everything going on, all the implications?
Always like week 17, crazy.
Yeah.
Too many 4 o'clock games is crazy, right? So your head's spinning. You're getting ready for a show. We got a little meeting why the games are going on. You're really, you're listening, but you're trying to pay attention to the games. Either way, it was an exciting day. It was a fun day. And I don't think it was too overwhelming. I think at one point I just finally got it down to I know all these games are on, but I'm going to put the majority of my focus, on these three or whatever, to where you felt I can handle that instead of trying to watch seven games at once.
All right. Good problem to have.
Yeah,
it is. I always have people say it, you really want us to feel bad for you? You're watching football all day long?
Yeah, right. I know.
It can be difficult, though. Okay. Pete has this well mapped out here. We've got themes.
Cool.
And we're getting right into it now. I'm crow hopping into those so they can roll it.
Let's do it.
With a damn okay.
Damn. Okay.
Damn.
There we go.
I'm okay.
Timing was good.
Damn. I'm okay. Yeah, no. I mean, yes. I'm okay. The legal gamblizing. Oh, baby. I am Chris Sims. I'm okay. Damn. Okay.
Extended version once again, playoff version. This is the AFC Wild Card Edition.
Booyah.
All caps as laid out here by Pete. Out of respect. Remember in Goodfellas, one thing happened. He's like, you want to know why? It was out of respect.
Yeah.
Out of respect for Cleveland not having been to the playoffs since 2002.
Yes.
Let's start there. They knock off the Steelers 24-22, and they are in the postseason.
Yeah, I mean, awesome. Great for Cleveland. Wasn't easy yesterday, as you know. I mean, I think the big thing with that, I had a lot of friends text me like, oh, man, I mean, if we could barely win against Pittsburgh, because I got a few Browns friends or people from Cleveland, if we could barely beat Pittsburgh when they don't have Big Ben and some of those guys out, how are we going to beat them next week? Listen, it's not just, apples to apples necessarily. Pittsburgh did get to go out and just play free and not, loose, have no pressure. There is something to that. There's no doubt about it. I always say in these type of games, really, the desperation factor doesn't come into play until the game really gets put in the balance late in the game, and then that that team that's in the must-win situation can usually dig a little deeper in those situations to pull out the football game. Mm-hmm. But if that team that's got no pressure and it's all going good and it's all going uphill and smooth, they can feed off that energy and be dangerous. But either way, it was a very impressive win for the Browns. The pressure was on them, definitely. They had a lot of obstacles to overcome once again during the week. They got a lot of players that were missing in that game yesterday. It doesn't make me think differently about the matchup that coming up this week in the wild card game. They can still win that football game. But I think between Nick Chubb, what you saw there, you know, sure, the defense was not at its best. But I think the other thing, too, is just Baker. You know, Baker, at a few of the throws and scrambles he made in the football game were big time. It's not always about consistency. Sometimes it's just about who's going to make the big play in the big moment. And I thought Baker really did that for the most part of the day with some scrambles and some other off-schedule throws where I went, that's why you picked that guy number one. Way to go, Cleveland.
And it wasn't just a one-off thing that's happened yesterday, the last couple of weeks. It's been the last few weeks going all the way back into, I think, mid-November.
Yes.
Best thing you saw from him yesterday?
I think it is the scrambling, the backyard aspect of his football game.
He's found a way to kind of maintain that while they're still doing a lot of very strategic play action setup.
No doubt.
There,
you're right. But I think it's all about the comfort that we've talked about with him just feeling comfortable within the offense, what the coach is asking with that certain play call. And now he's back to playing football again. So, Stefanski didn't call the right play. All right, no big deal. I can make a play happen to help the team out in this situation, keep us on the field on a third down or extend a drive or do anything like that. I think that's what really that jumped out to me. You know, and a few of the scrambles were in big moments of the football game where they needed a little juice, a little jump start there. So that was cool to see, definitely. But I do think, again, Cleveland was missing some secondary people. It'd be a fun matchup this week coming in the game. I don't think it's 24-9. Yeah. They had him in 4th and 11, and they threw a jump ball to Chase Claypool for a touchdown.
Right.
If he doesn't catch that ball, and let's say Denzel Ward's there next week covering him because he wasn't there yesterday, you know, I don't know what happens, and that game could have been looked a lot differently. I give Pittsburgh and Mike Tomlin credit, but good for Cleveland. Amazing.
I don't want to get too much away from what we're doing here on this Monday. Yeah. Just looking back at the biggest storylines from yesterday. And I know you're going to get into deep dives on Wednesday with the playoff previews.
Right.
But just kicking the tires a little bit, one question
about
the game coming up this weekend in Pittsburgh.
Sure.
Let's say one of your Cleveland friends say, hey, give me the biggest reason to believe it's going to be different than it was when it was 38-7.
Right, sure.
What's your response?
My response is that was still a Cleveland team that was they were still finding themselves, in the process of finding and figuring out who they were. They were still a little stuck in the, whoa, we got Odell Beckham Jr. and Baker Mayfield, and we want to spread and throw the ball because you can't match up with us. And they're not that way anymore.
Right.
Now they're like, hey, fuck you. We're going to run the ball, and we're going to run bootlegs. And then if we got to, okay, we'll drop back and pass or put Baker in the shotgun, and he'll make some plays off of that too. But I think that's the big difference. They, after that Pittsburgh game, became a team that basically said, oh, you're loading the box to stop the run? Doesn't matter. We're still going to run it, and we're going to dominate you in the run game that way. And I just think they've been a better team ever since that matchup the first time around.
As long as we're talking AFC North, nice job of mentioning run game a couple times. Let's get on to the Ravens.
Right.
They beat the Bengals.
Whoa.
It looked like they didn't want to be there. 38-3. How about 404 rushing yards? We could do this for 10 more years, and I might not get to say that again.
It's like an easy 400. That's what's scary. Like an easy. Like where I'm watching the film back, and I'm sitting there because I watch some of these run plays just to go, like, what did they exactly do to gash the Cincinnati Bengals like this? To where, you know, they rip off so many 10 and 15 and 20-yard runs that the drive gets over, and you go, oh, that was a pretty good drive, and then you go, man, I wonder what they rush for in that drive. And you go back and you tally it up and you're like, holy crap, okay, it was 6 rushes for 80 yards in that drive. It didn't seem like it, but it was. Like, it's just unbelievable. You know, those three guys right there, it is an amazing combination. J.K. Dobbins got a little power and game-breaking speed like we saw. Gus Edwards got a little game-breaking speed, but a lot of power. And then you got Lamar Jackson, who's got the quickest fucking feet you'll ever see and is faster than both of them in the straightaway field. And, Paul, it got in, you know, two things I saw. First off, Lamar threw the ball pretty well. I think that's worth noting. Secondly, I saw some marrying of some of the run plays with play action which I've been calling for a little bit from the Baltimore Ravens. But at the end of the day, the bread and butter for Baltimore right now that nobody seems to have an answer for the last few weeks is whether it's the double pulling backside offensive lineman concept. And what they're doing off of that is consistently gashing people right now. I mean, I think there was only really one big run in the game, and that might have been J.K. Dobbins' 72-yard run that wasn't a pulling guard. It was kind of an inside zone type of play. But all the other 10, 15, 20-yard runs were block down, big guy coming around, another big guy coming around, and then there's either Lamar or the tailback following them.
Right.
And what they always do, and we've talked about this, is they have a great changeup in, okay, if you overplay that, then somebody will keep it out the back door. And they usually gash you with that and have the right feel of when teams are overplaying.
Is anybody else in the league doing that in the run game?
They are. It's definitely becoming more and more of a thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I've seen Taysom Hill and the Saints do it. The Eagles certainly had done it with Jalen Hurts the last few weeks. I'm probably missing a few other teams that are doing that. But they're not the only ones. They are not the only ones. But they are the best at it. And that, for the most part, is just what absolutely gashed Cincinnati.
Things have changed. I don't want to say in a hurry because it's over the course of 4 or 5 weeks, but things have changed for Baltimore. They'd lost 3 in a row. They'd lost 4 out of 5. Now they have 5 wins in a row. Lamar's running a lot more than he was. He's throwing it a little bit better.
Yeah.
Let's compare how you feel about this Ravens team on a 5-game win streak compared to the one last year that went to the postseason on a 12-game win streak.
Yeah, I think – you know, last year, listen, they were the undisputed heavyweight champs of the NFL,
right,
where they went into the playoffs and you just went, I just can't imagine anybody but Kansas City really giving them issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but we still had the questions of, man, it was easy for them last year. They really had no meaningful games in the month of December.
Exactly.
They sat out week 17 and then had the bye week and then played the playoff game and got punched in the mouth. I'm like, oh, no, it's a playoff game. You know, and of course, coming off the year before where they lost the playoff game to the Chargers, I think the encouraging thing for them right now is it's been playoff mode for 5 weeks in a row. It's been so whether you want to talk about, whoa, Lamar Jackson's never won a playoff game. Yeah, okay, I get it. But these have been de facto playoff games here down the stretch. If they lost, they weren't going to get in, you know, or they had very little wiggle room. So they've had to approach it that way. And I think that will lessen the storyline of Lamar Jackson not winning a playoff game going into this game this week. And I wouldn't want to mess with them.
Right.
They're healthy on defense. They've gotten back totally 100% healthy. The O-line has got its game going on. They are dominating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the running backs, like we just talked about, they're unbelievable. And Lamar and the passing game, it's still not special or anything good. But like I've said for a number of weeks, they're trying to a little bit more of a concerted effort to tie the run game with the pass game. I think they're trying to be a little more aggressive with throwing the ball down the field to a Miles Boykin or a Hollywood Brown. And I think that's encouraging. And Lamar just has a great feel, too, of, okay, drop back. All right, I'll sit here in the pocket and wait for somebody to come open. But he knows when to abandon ship. Okay, abandon ship. Nobody's open. Let me get the hell out of here and make a run. And he's on fire right now.
It kind of feels like the Ravens offense and Lamar this year, they are right now more comfortable in their own skin than they have been the entire year.
Right.
More comfortable with what makes them really, really good. And they were there all of last year. But it just feels like he's running in a more free way. And the passing game, which just like Seattle's defense, doesn't need to be an A in Baltimore.
Right.
If it's a C-plus with how well they're running it and how well the offensive line is playing, then they're a real problem.
It's good enough. Exactly right. That's really it is. Because it always comes down to a good offense and, you know, everything you're talking about defending the whole field. And that was probably the one aspect that was missing. You know, down the field throwing, whether that's down the middle, you know, deep outs, things like that. But we're seeing more of that. And really, could have been more yesterday. He threw a nice post route to Hollywood Brown, who dropped it at one point down the field. He should have bigger stats. But, you know, I don't care about the stats as far as the numbers, the amount of completions, it's all that. You know, to me, a little bit that gets, you know, lost is the effectiveness of the pass game. And Baltimore's pass game is effective enough, and it makes enough plays to where, you know, you can't disregard it, you got to respect it, because it will change field position, or somebody will go down the middle of the field for a touchdown, and you'll be like, well, there goes 6 because we overplayed the run.
You said in 2 words what I tried to sum up in a few seconds, effective enough.
Yes.
And that's exactly what they need right now with how well they're running the ball. I do want to give a little more credit or point out to Lamar passing the ball or that passing game working better than it was
few
weeks ago. Let's take a look here. We've got a look at Lamar to Miles Boykin, 43-yard touchdown. Describe what we're seeing here.
Well, it's basically a double post concept. You got us on the right side, and let's rewind it and don't start it if you can. Just pause it at the start. At the right side there, he's just got a single cut with Hollywood Brown. So if he had like man-to-man coverage, he could just throw that out there and play one-to-one. But this play is specifically for this coverage. It's quarters coverage here. So they're hoping that the inside slot receiver is going to take, you know, the safety away, and then now that outside corner is going to be one-on-one with Miles Boykin. The other thing that's important here, check out, again, Paul, they got 42 Rashard on the right there in the slot. He's going to come in motion, and they're going to fake it to make it look like their little inside zone cutback play, which I like. So go ahead and play that, Pete, if you can. So there you go. Fake the inside zone. He looks down the middle of the field, which I believe was Mark Andrews. He gets the safety and everybody to follow him a little bit, just enough to where he can then go, oh, I got Miles Boykin deep one-on-one against this corner here. And Von Bell by that time is two out of position and chasing. And this is really not Von Bell's fault. It's the perfect play versus the perfect coverage and a defense that's trying to play two deep safeties, but cover four is also a little bit of a, hey, it's too deep, but we're going to let our safeties come downhill and be aggressive to stop the run too, and they just got caught.
Well, Ravens win big 38-3. They'll take on the Titans. We'll talk more about the Titans here in a little bit. That game coming up Sunday. It's the early game in Nashville. Moving on to Buffalo and their victory over the Dolphins. And it's awesome the way Baltimore ran against Cincinnati. But Cincinnati played like they didn't really want to be there. Miami had the number one scoring defense in the league. They had to win to get in the playoffs. And Buffalo goes for 56 points. How'd that happen?
To me, it's one of the most impressive things on football yesterday. And it's going a little under the radar, like where I want to be like, wait, the number one scoring defense in football got quadrupled yesterday.
I'd rate it number one as most impressive.
I agree. I mean, Pete will tell you, you know, one of the things I said on the text last night when we were figuring out, we got to talk about the Bills' offense. That's got to be up there. Like, this defense, even though the Dolphins, they've let up yards in between the 30s, they don't let people score. And this, to me, is just where, hey, guys, the Bills are hot as hell.
Yeah.
There's just no other way to say it. They are almost at the unstoppable point on their offensive side of the ball. They really are. They have everything. They have a scheme that can deliver, and then they have playmakers that can just make plays, and then they got a quarterback who can dissect you and make plays off schedule too, let alone enough of a running game. But that was shocking to me yesterday.
Yeah.
It really was. And especially the early turnover. He throws the interception. You go, oh, here we go.
Yeah.
They're going to kind of be, you know, relaxing because they're in and they're going to let them hang around. And that wasn't the case. You know, he corrected himself. And, you know, Flores, I watched, of course, this back on film. Flores tried to change coverages. You know, you got to be careful. Just like Kansas City, you can't play in the face, bump and run against Buffalo every play. Not with this cast of characters and this guy throwing the football. Forget about it. They'll make you look silly. So he tried to give some bastard looks of like, hey, we're man-to-man, we're in your face. Whoa, we drop into zone. And he tried to change coverages up. And it gave Buffalo some issues early because there were some false keys. I think he thought like, oh, wait, the corners are over. There's three receivers over there playing man-to-man.
Right.
Flores is smart, and he knows Dayball, and Dayball's been in New England. Mm-hmm. So then they drop back in three deep. And he's like, oh, man, it's not man. We had a man-to-man play, and now they're playing zone.
Right.
Buffalo got back on track. Like they do a lot of the times, where they stop worrying about calling the perfect play to just absolutely annihilate defenses. They got into just like, let's get in some all-purpose plays. Let's get it out of his hand quick.
Yeah.
And then that'll make them start playing a little bit more normal defenses, and then they take advantage of it.
It's underrated for how much that helps a quarterback, even an MVP-caliber quarterback like
Definitely.
Josh Allen.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to worry about being in that perfect play.
Right.
Gains that confidence all week. Hey, this is going to work no matter what.
Exactly right.
Just run it. So after Josh Allen's pure talent and how hot he is right now, if you're going to rate something second as to why they went in the 50s against Miami, more all the talent they have out wide or more the Dayball scheme yesterday?
Ooh. That is a really cool – I mean, Dayball scheme, to me, is one of the best in football. Mm-hmm. And that's why, you know, I'm a huge fan of him, and we'll talk about him later on here on the show when we talk about some of the firings going on in the NFL where I'm going to inject his name once again, especially to a place I like. it's really, of course, the combination of both, because he knows how to use the weapons and everything like that. But I think, you know, the weaponry, of course, it accentuates the offense. Yeah. I mean, when you have John Brown and McKenzie and, of course, Stephon Diggs.
McKenzie, it's not a name that we've been throwing around a lot this year.
I know.
Because
he's, you know, another guy got a rocket up his butt. Cole Beasley's hurt.
Yeah.
He can do a little bit of everything. He's kind of like their Mecole Hardman, like the Kansas City, hey, speed sweeps, punt return. You know, we don't get you in to run all the routes on the route tree, but we have a few plays for you every game where because you're dangerous.
Yeah.
But I just can't say enough about the Buffalo Bills, what they look like as a football team, mm-hmm. how they've transformed. They are definitely one of the two or three best teams in football going into the playoffs.
Two or three, I mean.
Maybe two.
Two or two better.
Maybe one. I don't know. You're right.
Kansas City better? Maybe.
Maybe. I'd probably take Kansas City if they were going to play tomorrow and you made me bet on the game, right? Mm-hmm. And I'd go, okay. I don't feel great about this, but I'm going to go.
You might pick Buffalo. If that was really happening, I get the feeling that Buffalo would be your heartfelt pick.
Buffalo, with everything in my brain and my heart, tells me they're playing better football than Kansas City right now. But Kansas City has an it factor.
They're still
Kansas City, where I just go, you can never count them out.
Right.
But just so impressive on both sides of the football. And it's going to take a special defense to stop this Buffalo offense.
And I have the question because they're playing against the Colts this weekend. At RV5618 says, have the Colts got any chance of stopping Allen, Diggs, and Daboll?
I don't think so. I don't. You know, I'm down on the Colts defense over the last month or so.
It's shifted for the worse, hasn't it?
It is. It's just a good defense. Yeah. It's not a great defense. And, you know, they don't have great cover corners to play man-to-man, which I think will make them reluctant to blitz. And, you know, the one thing is Josh Allen, like Mahomes and Lamar Jackson and even Kyler Murray and Russell Wilson, you know, they wear out defenses because of all their movement and the buying of time. And, I mean, how many times yesterday did Josh Allen sit in the pocket and, okay, wait, oh, nothing's there. Okay, let me move and move. Mm-hmm. Hey, you go this way. Oh, wait, nothing's there. Okay, hey, go that way. Move, move, move. Oh, touchdown.
Yeah.
And just think about that as a pass rusher or a coverage guy. You're running a wind sprint for 12 seconds. Like, that's not easy. Mm-hmm. You do that 5 or 6 or 10 times a game, your ass is going to be dead in the fourth quarter.
Right.
You know, and that's where I've had a worries about the Colts. When their pass rush and things die out as the game goes along, man, their defense bleeds and I don't know. We'll see. They're going to have to do something off the cuff or something to give them some sort of schematical advantage, because if they just play straight up, there's no way.
Can you think of something that's worked against the Bills recently? Because they've won 9 out of 10
since they
lost to, I think it was Tennessee, Kansas City back-to-back weeks.
Right. Well, then they lost the failed Murray, right? That's the last time they've lost.
And they're averaging 47 points per game their last three. So anything at all recently that a team, Indianapolis, can latch onto and say, hey, this gave them a hard time. Maybe we go with more of this.
No, I mean, I look through the winning streak, the team that played them the toughest, I thought, on the defensive side of the ball was the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah.
And that was because, of course, they have a good front four. They also would rush 5 just to take away Allen's ability, and they found some creative ways to rush 5.
Mm-hmm.
And they can cover pretty well on the back end. You're going to have a group that you can, you know, 20, 25 times a game, going to go, I need you to play man-to-man.
Yeah.
Because I got to take a chance here somewhere to get Allen or make a negative play.
And that worries you for the Colts?
Well, it worries me because their cover corners are not those type of guys, and that does concern me.
Can you think of a group in the NFL that was improved more through the draft? And I'm thinking using a first-round pick to get Diggs, fourth-round pick to get Davis, than what the Bills did with that group of pass catchers?
No.
It's really fun to watch.
It is really fun. Everything they did, it ended up being what I thought they were early in the year. I went into the season going, the Bills won the offseason between the draft and free agency. And, of course, the year started out and you went, whoa, the defense is not what I thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
But it ended up being what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where I got to give Leslie Frazier and McDermott a lot of credit. What they did to Miami offense yesterday, hey, no chance. And, listen, I know this won't be the last time, but we're going to end up – Tua's going to be a conversation going into the offseason.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no doubt. How can you feel real warm and cozy if you're a Dolphins fan or in the Dolphins organization about what you saw from Tua this last half of the season.
I don't think you can.
No.
And you know, people on the inside feel the same way, and they played so well for most of this year, with the exception of yesterday. That whole group will be there. The administration will be there. So the same group that brought him in and believed in him enough to take him that high, they're going to have to be the ones that evaluate, okay, what, how comfortable are we? How confident are we moving forward with
yeah,
this?
Yeah, no, I know. I think it's some real questions there. You know, again, I root the kid's a great kid. It's not personal. It's all about football here. We're talking business. But I just don't know what you can look at right now and just go, he doesn't pass the eye test. That's mm-hmm. all. That's all I'm saying. As of right now, that could change. But I'm just saying, I said this on the show this morning. I'll say it one more time. He was not in the same stratosphere as Herbert or Burrow this year
right.
as a player on the football field, nor did he even come close to passing the look test at which they did either. Mm-hmm. So that's what's concerning to me. And, you know, how many – this is a handful of times in the second half of the year, too, where we get in a game where we just go, Tua, forget, like, scoring a touch. They can't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it's going to be concerning when they evaluate to go – we have moments where we can't score points. We have to take him out of the game for Ryan Fitzpatrick. And they
right.
didn't have that luxury yesterday.
It happened,
and I think that made it more apparent yesterday.
Happened at Denver, maybe,
Denver,
sometime
recently. Right. Denver and the Raiders, we've had it.
I'm just thinking of ways to push back and play the other side. Because maybe there are people within the organization who still feel really, really good about him. I'm sure there are fans out there as well. If you wanted to say, hey, they were in this position in Miami to win on the last game in year end. So
yes.
he was a part of that. He took care of the ball pretty well.
He definitely
His
did.
His efficiency was pretty good.
He can be developed.
And it is a small sample size.
Exactly right. I don't want to rush to judgment. I'm not. I'm just trying to be real with you about, I think there's going to be those conversations that go on in the organization. And I think that stigma is going to be over his head this whole offseason until he kind of proves us wrong. But it's not the end of the line or anything like that. You know, yes, we're still in a developmental phase.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, again, the other thing, as great as it is from coming from Alabama, where you get taught and coached by like a pro and you know all those things, there is a problem sometimes from coming from Alabama, too.
Yeah.
The game was so easy that now you're like, wait, I'm not used to this. We usually just, it's 42-0 in the third quarter. I have to make a tight throw in the fourth?
I just called their game this weekend and watched the guy who's filling in for him or took over for him, Mac Jones.
And they're doing okay on offense.
It was a little bit of a hint last year when he came in and the offense didn't miss a beat.
Right.
He's really, really, really good. That offense is clicking along, maybe even a little better than it did.
I know.
With him. And I think it's tough, too, that this was his last game, and you have Josh Allen, who's also a young quarterback.
Exactly.
You look at that, and you're like, boy, is he 10 starts away from looking that good?
Right.
Or as good as Joe Burrow looked this year, or Justin Herbert?
Herbert throwing lasers around yesterday,
It doesn't
too.
Just live in a bubble. I think all those comparisons are going to come in, too.
No, I agreed. Agreed. So we'll see where that goes. Interesting storyline. The bottom line is, Buffalo's on fire.
Yes.
They're one of the best teams in football. And it is going to take a special defense, in my opinion, to slow this group down right now, or a really special offense just to go, okay, we'll get in the shootout, and we think we can do that. And I think there's only one in football that can do that right now.
We talked a little bit about the Indy defense. We'll hit their offense here in just a little bit. Time to take it up to 100, presented by Head and Shoulders. And actually, it's a little bit misleading because it's not just 100. It's 200 and also 2,000 total. Derrick Henry, 34 carries, 250 rushing yards, couple of touchdowns in the win at Houston.
Crazy. Yeah, crazy. I mean, hello, Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Derrick Henry, we'll see you in, 15 years. Okay, it's like official, And it's just now, it's just like, hello, are we going to be one of the three greatest running backs of all time, the five greatest running backs of all time? It's legendary status.
Line with that, first player to lead the NFL in rushing back-to-back seasons, LT did it back in 06 and 07.
LaDainian, right.
Not only is it special to hit 2,000 yards, it's rare to do this back-to-back. Not to 2,000 back-to-back, but to lead the league 2 years
Sure. I mean, listen, I don't know if Pete can look this up as we're talking here because I'm Johnny Historian, but LaDainian, Emmitt Smith, in the early 90s.
Barry Sanders, maybe?
Maybe. Yeah. I think he might have had one later in his career. I think you're right, like 96, 97.
He's looking. Yeah.
Right. I think Earl Campbell in the 70s and Jim Brown. And that's all. It's like it's a very short list in the history of football.
Edgerrin
James.
Yeah.
There's a good one. Okay. Barry Sanders, 96, 97.
Barry Sanders, Emmitt did it 3 years in a row.
Okay,
wow.
That's shocking. Okay. And Eric Dickerson, Earl Campbell, right? OJ. Okay, mm-hmm. So there you go. So that's welcome to the Hall
Incredible
of Fame.
Incredible company.
Yeah, welcome to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Annihilation. You know, the thing I'm amazed by with them up front, it's never like, I'm never like, well, that was an interesting game design run play.
Right.
It's the same three run plays almost every time.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't matter. You know, first off, his vision is off the charts. When I watch a game back, the whole year, I could probably tell you like two or three plays where I go, why did he cut that way? He should have gone that way. Mm-hmm. But other than else, he makes cuts where I go, damn, how did he see that?
Right.
How did he make that cutback cut there? How did he go up into a mosh pit of people and have the feel of like, wait, they lost the edge on the right side. Let me bounce it out now and run out there. That's where he has an incredible knack to me, let alone his physical ability.
It doesn't look like he's going that fast on TV.
That's my little boy last night. It was just like, Dad, how come nobody catch him?
Right.
And I go, because he's really fast.
Yeah.
I still can remember Sports Science, John Bumpus or Brinkus.
I can picture him.
You know what I'm talking about, right? He still has all the records on there.
Does he?
Everything.
Yeah.
Power output, explosiveness, everything.
John Brinkus.
That was it. John Brinkus. Yeah, sorry, John Brinkus. I don't mean to disrespect, but it really is. It's those type of runs. It's inside zone cutback. It's outside zone. It's a few, hey, everybody block a man. I'm going to follow the fullback in the hole. And then they do the old, hey, just get body on body. And he runs up the middle, and if there's a little alley to run, he hits it. If he feels like, oh, man, they've all mashed it inside, he just has a great ability to go, wait, let me put on the brakes, and then we go outside, and he outruns people that he shouldn't outrun to the edge. It's just, it's amazing that way.
And it's hard not to bring this up because it's so central to what the Ravens have to be thinking about right now playing against Tennessee. 30 for 195 in the playoffs last year. And this season, late November, he went for 133.
Yeah.
So we can praise him up and down for what he did this season and yesterday. He deserves it. But at some point, you got to get right to, is it going to be more of the same this weekend?
It's really one of the worst matchups for Baltimore.
Right?
It really is. Because now Baltimore has to – Baltimore's run defense is not as good as I think they've wanted it to be in years past. They did a pretty good job the first time around.
Yeah.
Let's not forget that game went into overtime and Henry had a long run there that got him over 100 in overtime. But regardless – you're still got to worry about stopping Henry, and now you're leaving yourself on an island with A.J. Brown and Corey Davis, which is scary.
Right.
They're good at taking shots, this team.
Yeah.
So that's where it's going to be interesting to watch as we go along. Plus, here's the other thing with Tennessee, and this just tells you where they're a little different from last year to this year, Paul. It's 31-28.
Yeah.
It's 4th-and-11 on the 38-yard line.
Yeah.
They go for it, up by three. That just tells you how bad Mike Vrabel thinks his defense is, that he's just going – Deshaun Watson's gonna score.
Yeah.
So we might as well just try to score.
Yeah.
And not waste too much time, because if they get the ball back, okay, great. They'll go down and score, then we can get it back and have time.
Right.
I mean, that's where it's got. Their defense is so freaking bad right now, it is unbelievable. But their offense, as we know, is special.
You bring up Deshaun Watson, let's have a little mini after the real damn okay about Deshaun. B Will 1990 says, damn okay Deshaun Watson with all the issues he endured this year. Still led the league in passing yards.
I mean,
worth the price of admission.
Worth the price
for
of admission.
A bad team, right?
Definitely. One of the five or six best quarterbacks in football. No doubt. I don't give a shit if they went 0-16 this year. He kept them in every football game. And just like yesterday, he does everything possible to win the game. He can't cover and block people and, you know, snap the ball and do all. He can't do everything.
Yeah.
He's phenomenal. I've loved that he's had this year in a lot of ways, because it's undeniable how good he is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's given me the jump off point in a few radio conversations to go, see, it's not all about the quarterback.
Right.
You got to have a team.
Yeah.
Everyone watches this guy and goes, he's one of the five best.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean your team goes 12-4. You got to help him out a little. I mean, literally, the last 3 weeks has just been like, okay, when's Watson going to throw to Brandon Cooks? When's Watson going to throw to Brandon Cooks? Oh, they know he's going to throw to him. He's still going to hit him. He's amazing. He's amazing. I love watching him play.
We'll talk more about some of the coaches that were let go today. But since we're talking about Houston, because of Deshaun Watson, do you think that is the most attractive job?
I think that and the Chargers one are right up there with it. I think they're both extremely attractive to the quarterback. Deshaun may be a hair more attractive than Herbert right now just because he's proven.
Yeah.
But the Chargers do have less holes to fill.
Correct.
Than the Houston Texans. So yeah, that's where it's close. But I think clearly those are the two top spots right now for sure.
All right. And again, more on the coaches and the openings coming up here in a little bit. That was Take It Up to 100, presented by Head & Shoulders, available at Walmart. We have another Soundful preview here. This is Victory Lap. I didn't know we had sound for Victory Lap. Ooh, is this new?
I don't know. I can't remember anymore.
All right, Pete, hit it.
Oh, I do remember.
Oh, yes, we do. Yeah, victory. That.
Victory.
Very NFL film.
It is.
Like, victory is ours. All right. Rookies edition. Pete's leading us down the rookie path.
Okay.
Colts 28, Jags 14. So yep. Indianapolis is in. We talked about the game against Buffalo a little bit. But the rookie hook here, obviously, Jonathan Taylor, 30 carries for 253.
My man.
Right there with Derrick Henry.
Yeah, I mean, he's got some special traits. You know, again, he's on fire here as of late. They're playing certain points of games here, the right style of football. They need to run the football. We've talked about this a lot. He's a special game-breaking runner. He was great yesterday. They had some cool game design runs. But, again, you see the power combination, speed combination this kid has. I mean, he can fly. You know, there's you know, that's why he ran 4.39. But, you know, just, yes, a specimen. But I think the biggest thing that jumps off to me, again, for maybe like the third, fourth week in a row, where I just go, when the Colts play through the run and play through Jonathan Taylor, they're a much more dangerous team than we play with, oh, Phillip Rivers patting the ball in the pocket, just we're waiting for a disaster to happen. Mm. That is the biggest thing. They got to continue to play this way. We've talked about their defense not being as dominant. The running game will help them out, and it's going to help Phillip Rivers out. Listen, you can't ask Phillip Rivers to drop back and throw the ball 40 times and have him sit in the pocket and do things. It's just going to lead to bad things. I'm sorry. He has his limitations at this point of his career. There's still a lot of good, and they can win with him. But what we've seen throughout the year is when you have to rely on him and just him, it can be dicey. Yeah. And that's where it gets scary. And that's where they hit a lull in the football game.
Right.
They hit a little lull at every point of the game here recently where I just think they get a little too cute and a little too pass happy.
Yeah.
Where I just don't go, I want to go, wait, we've been running the ball, and now we came out and we've thrown the ball three straight plays, or we ran the ball once for a first down, and now we throw the ball four straight plays after that, or whatever, and you just go, I don't get that.
And Pete just told me, say that one more time, Pete, about what Jonathan Taylor's done. Last seven games, only Derrick Henry has more rushing yards. Okay, than Jonathan Taylor. And I think back to when Phillip Rivers has been at his best. I thought about how you kind of described it and how they need to have more Jonathan Taylor to make him better. Remember that big win against the Packers? I mean, that was probably maybe their signature win.
I think so.
Along with beating Tennessee.
Right.
He had 22 carries in that win against the Packers. And thinking back on it, it just felt like the right mix to make what's really good about Phillip still even better.
Yeah, it helps Phillip in the fact that it delivers him some easier completions because you got to play different on defense. It opens up the play action pass game again where he can just play action, boom, read it, throw it. You know, it leads to easy short completions when they do that. You know, that's the one of the things I wrote. I just wrote, like, with the Colts, it should be simple. Run the ball, play action pass, quick throws. That's when they're at their best. That's when Rivers is at his best. When he starts patting the ball in the pocket, trouble's coming. It's coming. And again, his arm in those situations is not going to make big throws. Just like yesterday, it's 20-14, and you go, okay, here they go. They're going to mount a drive. He's got a post route to T.Y. Hilton. He's wide open. It's a touchdown. It's just the ball hangs in the air forever. Mm. The backside corner comes from way far away to intercept it. Because the ball hangs in the air, it was probably about 2 or 3 yards shorter than where you'd like it to be. And that's where I think it just gets a little scary to me. This is where, like, to your point, they're in a little win streak right now, and they play better when they play through the run.
They've won 4 of the last 5. Even though it feels to me like in the AFC, they're the team being talked about the least by far.
Yes.
You look at the other teams that are in from the AFC, storylines everywhere, and you get to Indy, and people just, there's just not a lot of buzz about it.
No, I agreed. I think the big thing is, you know, there's not one dominant area of their football team anymore mm-hmm. that excites everybody.
Yeah.
So, to me, where I thought maybe the defense was that, like week 8 or 9,
right,
that kind of fizzled away. Yeah. And now you go, okay, so what is, there's a lot of good on the team, but is there anything great? And then, you know, you blow a lead to Pittsburgh, who is struggling, and you get blown out at home against the Tennessee Titans, and that'll lead people to go, you're good, but we don't think you're that good.
And you have to play at Buffalo.
And you got to play the hottest team in football right now. Right.
Okay. Rookies edition.
They better run the ball, though. Right. This week, especially.
The guy's hot.
And yeah, they're hot, and they have
to keep it away from Josh Allen.
Right, they got a really good interior offensive line. You know, I know they're missing Costanzo, but everything else is the same, and they're damn good. They need to play. That's their bread and butter. Sorry,
Justin Jefferson. No, it's okay. We transition here to the NFC North. Vikings beat the Lions 37-35. Another big game for Jefferson out of LSU. 9 for 133. I don't want to say expected, but I mean, we've seen this before.
It's almost is expected.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost, I feel like every week it's around this number in the stat line, you know, and it's never like just a bunch of chump catches or bull crap catches.
Right.
It's everything down the field, you know, route running, contested catches. I can't sit here and lie to you and tell you that I watched a lot of this football game yesterday. I mean, sorry, Minnesota and Detroit. There was no meaning. And I had other games that were more important to watch.
I had better things to do.
But I will say I give a lot of credit. Zimmer, Kirk Cousins, that offense had a pretty special year. I think it ended up as a top five offense in football.
Jefferson's second most yards all time for a rookie?
I mean, wow. That's insane.
Receiving yards.
Yeah. I mean, and he's got it all. They found themselves a superstar there that they can build around in the pass game.
Pete, that was behind who? One more time. Bill Grohman.
Wow.
1960
Good
Oilers.
Old Bill Grohman. I'm a history buff, but I don't know that one. Sorry.
The Oilers were in those silver helmets with the
old
logo
on it. They did, right, right.
Way, way back when.
Okay, way to go, Justin Jefferson.
Another Justin. Justin Herbert, 302, three touchdowns, no picks. Exactly what we've seen pretty much all season from him.
It is. Again, same kind of thing here. I'm not going to sit here and lie to the Chargers Nation and tell you I was glued to the TV, all right? But –
they did beat the Chiefs by 17.
A
compromised Chiefs team.
Well, and every time I turned around, it was just, you know, another perfect throw by Justin Herbert that was flying through the air. I mean, that's all I can really say. The guy never loses control of the football. He can throw the ball with power through coverages where defenders are like, well, he's not going to make this throw, or he can't get this in there. Whoa, he got it in there. He can throw over the defense. And listen, that's a rare thing. This is something like my dad talks about a lot. This is really his thing, where he can throw. He's so big, he throws over the D-line. So there again, where we go, you know, size is overrated and all that. Okay, yeah, it can be overrated, but there is a skill to it that's a precious skill. And he can have, like yesterday, there's a few times he's got people all up in his chest and stuff, and he can raise his arm up and still go, huh, and throw the ball 15 yards, and you just go, man, like, I know that doesn't look sexy to everybody, but me as Johnny quarterback, that's like not that easy.
Right.
And the smaller quarterback wouldn't have been able to do that. And I'm not trying to disrespect the smaller quarterback. It's just, this is one of his attributes.
Those quarterbacks who are 6 feet-ish, Drew, Russell Wilson, they can find lanes. But they can't do throwing over the defensive line.
Around them.
Right.
I mean, you know. Brady can do that. Was phenomenal in his prime because he'd hang in there and take the shot, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a rare thing in this day and age in the NFL because, like what you said, even the bigger quarterbacks this day and age look for lanes. They don't look to throw over the top as much as they used to.
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat, protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
Thinking about Justin Herbert, that brings us to the unfortunate part, Black Monday. Not a lot of surprises here. We kind of knew what was coming with the coaches being fired. Anthony Lynn of the Chargers, he's out. Doug Marrone with the Jaguars is out. And Adam Gase fired by the Jets as well. So, Chargers, Jaguars, Jets. Quarterback issues with all of them, except for the Chargers. They have Justin Herbert. But if you take the Jaguars' job, you got the number one pick. You can get Trevor Lawrence if you would like. The Jets have the number two pick. Which of those three jobs would you like to have the most?
I want the Chargers' job. I mean, you know, again, Trevor Lawrence, I'm a huge fan. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to sit here and tell you right now that I think he's definitely going to be better than Justin Herbert. I don't know that. They're very similar people, you know, and
head start on one of the questions I'm getting at you as soon as the Super Bowl is over. You have Herbert and Burrow and Lawrence in the same class. How
right.
would you rank them?
I know.
You can just think about it now.
Yeah, but, well, I mean, I want to evaluate.
Get some mileage
but
out of
you're
that.
Right. I'm sure I will. But
because it might be third.
Well, because it might be. I mean, there's no joke. I don't know where that goes. It's going to be interesting. Trevor Lawrence is awesome. We know that. Is it a little blown out of proportion? Yes, because he's Clemson. He's in the national finals or semifinals every year, and I get all that. Listen, if Justin Herbert played on Clemson the last few years, the results would have been the same. Mm-hmm. I don't think differently there. So, you know, I would be most excited to get that job.
Yeah.
Plus, you got some defensive pieces in place.
Yeah.
You know, there's a few receivers that you can, of course, Keenan Allen,
yeah.
and figure out what you want to do with Mike Williams, and you can play with that aspect. You know, so I think there's a lot of positives there. But we know what Herbert is already. And I think Trevor Lawrence will be a superstar. I think he's very similar to Herbert. I think Herbert's a hair better thrower than Trevor Lawrence. I think Trevor Lawrence is a better athlete than Justin Herbert. That's how I kind of view it. And not to say either one is too far behind in either category there.
Right.
But Herbert is so special that I sit here and go, Chargers, start the arms race.
Yeah.
Go all in on offense in L.A. and steal the show and get signed receivers and go Kansas City in the division on Kansas City.
And go get who is your head coach.
And I want to say, get Brian Daboll. Listen, I love Eric Bieniemy. I love him, and he has to be a head coach this year. I'm not a fan of let's take a coach from one of our rivals and now bring him into our division. Like, tell me when in the history that's really worked. We're going to copy the team in our division, and now we're going to one-up them with one of the guys that learned from the guy over there? I don't see that. I don't know.
But you also have all that knowledge that he has of the
great.
Team you're chasing.
I'm going to go with the teacher to win those matchups, though, more times than not.
Yeah.
The teacher taught the pupil, and I just trust that more. I wouldn't mess with that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it's my Bill Parcells Hanley. What the hell is Ray Hanley?
Yeah.
Where he just, I want to go.
I'll ask your dad about that.
Yeah, right. Not the greatest. I just, I don't like that in division thing. To me, I would go Daboll, Chargers. Now we have a different offense. Andy Reid doesn't know our offense and doesn't know what to
Good
expect.
Point.
And we have our own style and things like that.
And he seems to be more attached to Josh's development than Mahomes' development. Giving credit to Bieniemy, whether it's right or it's wrong.
Yeah,
right.
I think you're right. I think you are right.
Yeah.
You're talking about with.
I'm talking about Daboll.
Yes.
His star
Agreed.
Has become brighter
Agreed.
As Josh has gotten better.
You're right.
Maybe more so than Bieniemy's because Andy Reid gets
Andy
so Reid much
Andy Reid got
credit
the Bieniemy.
That.
You're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
Was Daboll in New England when you were there?
He was there with me just towards the end.
Okay.
Right?
So like best thing about him besides the incredible. Way Buffalo's offense is playing. Now.
Yeah, no, I think the best way I would put he's just a man's man, a normal guy. There was never pettiness or politics when I was in a room with him, which I always appreciated.
Yeah.
Listen, there was coaches up in New England who they wouldn't talk to me. They didn't like me. Mm-hmm. Then I said I was leaving, and they were like, oh, man, it was great working with you.
Right.
We had such – I wish we could have spent more time. And I'm like, no, you were competing and jealous of me, and you treated me like an asshole. Mm-hmm. Dayball was always great. Like always, the same guy, not threatened, comfortable in his own skin, mm-hmm. trying to learn ball, and easy to talk to.
Right.
And I think that's why you see Stephon Diggs has a change in his career.
Yeah.
Josh Allen, and you're talking about his development. Yeah, that's directly with Dayball.
Right.
He's taught them football, offense, how to act on and off the field, and how to just man up. Like, we played like shit. Sorry, we'll be back next week.
Right.
And not make excuses. That's what I love about Dayball. If I'm the Chargers, I'm going all Dayball.
So a few years ago, I was doing the preseason games with Trent Green for the Chiefs, and Brian was there. I think he was the offensive coordinator. If he wasn't, he was working somewhere high up with the offense.
Right.
But I went to Kansas City to spend a day there to get to know the team. And it was that day in June, the last day of minicamp before the coaches get 4 or 5 weeks off. They get time with their family. And they were all packing up, going somewhere. They were out there
as
soon
as
they could.
Right.
Brian knew that I wanted to sit down with him and really kind of talk personnel, what he was going to do scheme-wise, because it would really help me. What does he care? But it would help me with the preseason games. He stayed later than all the other coaches to spend an hour and a half with me running through personnel, running through, here's what we're going to be looking for in the preseason. So like you say, he's a man's man. Guys will like him.
Right.
My 2 hours with him lines right up with
that. That's what I mean. It's just, you know, the respect for human beings that comes off. You see that.
Right.
He's earned his way. Yes, it's the New England offense, but he's got his own style and you know, just his own spin on what he's done with it. His time in college at Alabama, all of those things.
That's
he's taken
right.
away a little bit of everything to where, it's the New England offense, but it's got more to offer that way. And he's on fire as a play caller. I love Eric Bieniemy. Like I said, if I'm the Houston Texans, I'm going Eric Bieniemy. Yeah. That's where I'd want
him. Just want to think about him with Deshaun.
That would be amazing. Yeah. Right. I'm just not a big fan in let's steal a coach from within our division think that we're going to be better than the team that was in our division that we're stealing this guy from, and they were already the Kings.
Right.
I don't know if that works.
All right, let's get to Give Me the Headlines, presented by Hyundai. We have a theme for everything here, Chris. This is the NFC East edition of Give Me the Headlines. Let's start with the Giants beating the Cowboys 23-19.
Big and blue.
Damn. Right?
Very well done. Man. Yeah. Big and blue. That's
I get
what
it.
We are. Damn it. Big blue was big.
The nonverbals are good. Damn, there. Blue. Telling that.
Damn. Yeah.
Almost. It was almost an awesome Sunday.
Almost.
For those guys,
it really
right?
was. It was fun to watch at 1 o'clock. It really was. I enjoyed it. It was great to root for the Giants in a meaningful game like that.
Yeah.
Especially against the Cowboys, all of that.
Yeah.
Really, really were the better team on the field throughout yesterday. It was giant mistakes that let the Cowboys hang around. I mean, Daniel Jones and Gallman mess up a handoff.
Yeah.
You know, Evan Ingram has a ball that goes right between his hands. It's going to hit him in the face. Interception. You know, but again, Giants, I know it's 6-10 and it's nothing to like write home about, but I'm excited about the direction the Giants
end
are going.
End of the season
in.
Was much better than the beginning and middle. That's something to feel good
about. I think
about.
So, definitely. And Daniel Jones made some big plays yesterday, playing through, you know, hurt, you know, made some big throws to Slayton and Dante Pettis. But the story of the day was the defense. And a little bit of like what we talked about. The defensive line.
Leonard Williams.
Defense, Leonard Williams, 3 sacks. They're going to have to show him the money for sure. And again, this is why, like, lately, like, I really think football is going this way with the Giants and their defensive approach. It's for games like yesterday. It's going to show true. I think size is about to become more of a factor in the NFL once again. We're seeing the ground and pound approach on the offensive side of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have some of these high-octane offenses like the Cowboys yesterday, it's why I took the Giants to win the game. I just thought they're big dudes up front. Again, they're 300 across – It's 305, it's 340, it's 315, and then it's 305 again across the board. I thought maybe they could handle the run game by themselves, and then they could play too deep and stop the pass game and all those Cowboys receivers. And they were really the star of the day because Zeke never got going.
Right.
They continued to be able to play coverage and not worry about getting on an island against those wide receivers. And you know, that D-line really helped them win the football game.
I know what the topic is going to be coming out of Philly here. Washington beats the Eagles 20-14. I'm curious what your specific headline is going to be as it relates to the number one topic there.
Tanks for the memories.
No H.
Nope.
Just T.
Just tanks. Tanks for the memories, because that was the first time we have gotten to witness a real live national tanking in the NFL.
And then that was my reaction too. Like, right. We don't see many firsts, but that was the first time you're watching. You're like, oh my gosh, like this is actually happening.
It's happening.
This is what we're watching.
Yeah.
And then it becomes, what was it for? Was it for just for the draft picks? Is there something in the quarterback dynamic there with Jalen Hurts and Carson Wentz that came into play? Was it the head coach? Was it the front office? Does somebody in the front office hate the Giants that much? Like, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't think it's that. I mean, I'm sure they hate the Giants.
So the Giants thing is off the table.
I don't think that it's okay. That. That to me would be a little petty.
I agree.
But I know, but you never know.
It would have to come from on high.
You're right.
Okay.
The NFL.
Let's remove that.
There's plenty of petty people
so then
in
we,
the NFL.
Yes.
Yeah.
So let's remove that. We
right.
have the allure of the draft picks
right.
moving from 9 to 6. We have, and I don't think this is being talked about quite as much, we don't know what's going on with Carson Wentz and who supports him and who doesn't. Jalen Hurts, who supports him, who doesn't. Maybe there was something there playing a big factor too.
Well, okay. First, I think the last two things I think are true. This is kind of what I hit on a little bit this morning with Florio. Like, first off, hey, trade. I mean, first round picks, top 10 picks, they have value. I mean, they're real assets. And every pick that goes up has a little bit more value as far as the assets that would be needed to get to that spot.
It's an easier way to go from 9 to 6 than it would be to give up a bunch of draft picks and players.
Well, definitely. I mean, in a lot of ways. So here's the dilemma, and this is really the big conversation. You know, a lot of teams don't want to do those type of games because they don't want to start to infuse the we're losing.
Right.
They don't want to have that. You know, the coach is always banging the drum. We play every game. We compete and do all those things. And when you deliberately lose a game, guys walk away and go, wait, coach said we were going to do this, this, and this all week. Did he fucking lie to my face?
Yeah, right.
So you're going to have those questions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why a lot of like, you know, yeah, you wouldn't see a lot of big-time coaches do that because I think they're afraid of that creeping into the building and, you know, maybe my message gets lost and all of those type of things. I think that's that fear. Now, Doug Peterson, I don't think he fears it as much because, one, I think he's an amazing communicator.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a great feel for the locker room and guys and things like that. So maybe that emboldens them a little bit. And, you know, the reality, too, is, you know, I mean, three picks is a big deal.
It's a big deal. Yes,
I mean, it's a big deal. What if next year in the draft, you know, we get into it, we're getting the evaluations.
Mm-hmm.
And let's just say the Eagles need a big-time defensive end, right? And you're sitting here and we're doing the draft and I'm going, man, this defensive end is – he's like Chase Young. People are sleeping on him.
Mm-hmm.
So he's definitely going in the top 5 or 7 in the draft. It's going somewhere in there.
Right.
I mean, what if Philadelphia is sitting there going, man, we need a defensive end so badly, which they do actually.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm throwing it out there. And now you go, oh, he went – at number 7, and we're number 9.
Right.
Why? To win the fucking Washington game, week 17?
Yeah, right.
Is that worth it?
Yeah.
So they're playing the long play. I'm not mad at Philadelphia for what they did. They got to do what's best for them.
I think people are just shocked that they actually saw it.
Because it's the first time in NFL history we're seeing it, and it was in a national televised game.
Right.
And it was a game that meant something for multiple teams.
Right.
So it was like, whoa, I can't believe it. And it pissed me off, sitting there as a viewer. My little boy, Philip. He fucking
upset.
Flipped.
Yeah.
You know, he's rooting for the Giants.
Yeah.
Oh, fucking
what
Eagles.
Was your explanation in the moment about it? When he looked at Dad and said, what the hell's going on?
I told him about the draft picks first. Mm. I didn't even get into the Jalen Hurts thing because I think first off, now to go to that. I just told him about the draft picks. I just said that they don't care. I said, I think they want to have a higher draft pick. That's what they're worried about.
Yeah.
Now, I do think the quarterback thing had something to do with this. No doubt.
I need some details on the quarterback thing.
Well, the quarterback thing between Carson Wentz and Jalen Hurts, and they're going into having the most interesting offseason maybe in football because of this conversation.
Right.
And I think they knew that if they won with Jalen Hurts, and Jalen Hurts wins that game and pulls it out and has another pretty impressive game, which it looked like he was on that way, that they were going to be backed into a corner where, no, Jalen Hurts is going to be your starting quarterback. The Philadelphia fans are not going to take it. And I think they still want to salvage something with Carson Wentz.
Do you think Carson wants to?
No, and he shouldn't. Bye. See ya.
So shouldn't the organization know that too? I mean, well, he doesn't want to come back?
I'm sure they know a little. They're scared right now. They saw the report that yesterday, Chris Mortensen. He talked about Wentz and, you know, wanting out of town. I think he made a quote that the fracture relationship between Wentz and Peterson.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, Wentz has to get out. Sorry.
Right.
I don't know what other way to say it. If I was advising Carson Wentz, I'd tell him to get out. He's in a no-win situation. Like, there's nothing. Between the Foles, this right here, this is going to continue to linger into the offseason. If he does come back and is the starter, as soon as he throws an incompletion, everyone's going to want Jalen Hurts back in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a marriage that's not going to work.
Right.
And if I'm him, this was the last straw. You got Jalen Hurts or whatever you want to do. I've had enough. Get me out of here.
So,
and he needs a fresh start.
You think draft picks moving from 9 to 6 and also grasping at a last straw. We don't want this kid coming back and leading us to a win in the last game because we still want to bring back Carson Wentz.
Carson Wentz is their guy. I mean, Howie Roseman and Doug Peterson made trades to get the number 2 pick,
yep.
And they've given him a ton of money. So they want that to work.
But they've also seen him have more turnovers than any quarterback in the league.
Oh, I know. I know. Well, I'm sure. Listen, it wasn't a good year.
Yeah.
You know, but just as we've said, it was a shitty team, too, around him in a lot of ways. They've also seen him play at an MVP level and carry the team last year with a shitty team. So
we have two.
I know. Right. Yeah. So that's where, you know, I don't think their belief. I believe the reports when I hear like, oh, they just think it was a blip year, like a bad year, a blip on the radar.
Yeah.
And he's going to bounce back. But I just think there's too much damage has been done.
Right.
And I don't know. I think it's too much for Carson. And if I were him, I'd want out of there and a fresh start and just not have to deal with, you know, the controversy and the noise anymore.
Controversy, man. All caps.
Yeah.
And, coming out of Philadelphia
no
after
doubt.
That one. All right. Damn okay. NFC playoff edition. So we have hit the AFC. Do we get to listen twice to the damn okay?
Oh, let's not. Let's not, okay? All right,
okay.
Thank you.
That's two votes against it. Tom Brady.
Yeah.
Buccaneers beat the Falcons 44-27. Boy, a month ago, we're wondering if this team is going to even come close to the playoffs. And now, I mean, who's better in the NFC? Green Bay?
I mean, that's it. I mean, maybe. That's it. And that's like a maybe. I don't even know. I mean, yeah, okay, I'd probably take Green Bay today if they had a, you know, if you made me bet on who comes out. But I think the Buccaneers are in the conversation for one of the best teams in football.
And the damn okay is specifically to Tom Brady.
I mean, because damn. I mean, holy crap.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's amazing. You know, the comfort, the way the offense looks. I can really sit here and go, I mean, I don't know. Other than Buffalo, I think this might be the most explosive offense in football the last 4 or 5 weeks.
Wow.
And I know Kansas City's right there in that conversation too.
Right.
But, I mean, it's every game, every quarter right now where you're just going, Brady bomb to Gronk, Brady bomb to Evans,
it's
Brady bomb to A. Brown and A.B.
Midfield to downfield.
Right.
Since the bye week in early December, they've won 4 in a row. Remember how bad they were before the bye week? They lost 3 out of 4. The 38-3 debacle against New Orleans was in there.
Right.
But in this 4-game win streak, Chris, they've gone 26. 31, 47, and 44 points.
Yeah, their offenses, they got it. It's one of the best offenses in football. They have figured out how to play with him. He's comfortable. They're protecting him unbelievable. He's throwing the ball as well as he's ever had in his life. And the crazy thing is, like, he has that scramble to the right throw to Antonio Brown, where I don't think he was throwing to Antonio Brown.
I don't think so either.
He's throwing to Scotty Miller in the back of the end zone, who's also going to catch it. So it wasn't like it was a bad throw.
I think we have that.
We got that play.
Okay. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so all right, here we go. You'll see Brady, first off, scrambles out to the right. All right, you see Scotty Miller in the back of the end zone. He is throwing to him. But Antonio Brown, who's running the first of the two posts there, he kind of is in the area and sees the ball, and he just goes, attacks it, and gets it. I think the most impressive thing, though, is Brady runs better now than he did in 2013.
He's moving around in a different way this past month.
He's not like a gangly deer anymore.
Yeah.
Like, he's actually got coordination and a little bit of explosive nature in his movements.
At 43, that's supposed to go the other way.
I know. It's amazing. It's amazing what he's doing, the level he's playing. They're dangerous as hell. I don't worry about their offense one bit. I do worry about their defense.
Which part of it?
I mean, all of it. I just think moving the ball has just been too easy. They can't rush the passer quite the way I thought. You know, they have moments of their secondary making plays, but, man, they have moments, too, where they get diced up and everything there, too. So it is going to be about Brady and that offense winning games for them and continuing to put pressure on the opposing teams.
They got some pretty good news about Mike Evans today. Remember, he dropped that touchdown, looked like, ooh.
Yes.
You fear the worst about that knee. No ligament damage, so they're hopeful that he can play this weekend too.
They need him. I mean, we know that. He's a special football player. He's a red zone nightmare. Mm. He's a game plan changer nightmare for the opposing defense.
How about this? First player to hit 1,000 yards in seven consecutive seasons.
Yeah.
Each of his first seven seasons. That's amazing.
I know. He's one of the most underrated great quarterbacks. I mean, great wide receivers of our era.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's just 6'5", 225, ran 4.37. You know, been down on a team that hasn't got a lot of national attention.
Right.
But has been one of the five best receivers in football probably for the last 4 years and is continuing that.
So it's Buccaneers and the Washington football team on NBC Saturday night
at
8:15. Should be a good one.
I know you'll
be here watching all of it.
Yep.
Jalen Ramsey also showing up on the NFC. Damn okay. Rams knock off the Cardinals 18-7, and he was up against DeAndre Hopkins a lot.
Best corner in football in 2020 was Jalen Ramsey for me. I know Xavier Howard had the interceptions and all of those things.
We have the route tree here. Take a peek there.
Yeah, let's check it out. Well, first off, I mean, that's one thing that's concerning. Again, as we talk about Arizona, it's limited. I mean, does he go to the other side of the field ever? I mean, that just shows you.
Yeah.
That Arizona's offense has to grow, okay? All right, and then this guy's a freak. I mean, I don't know. It's just, cover DeAndre Hopkins, cover DK Metcalf, shut them down. It's okay. No big deal. They're just two of the freakier guys on the planet. Oh, okay.
Nope.
Jalen Ramsey got it all. He's got the physicality at the line of scrimmage, the straight-ahead speed to where he doesn't have to overrun to keep up with those guys. Because when he does put on the brakes, he can do that. He's a phenomenal tackler. He brings attitude to their defense, you know, which I love. He's one of the best players in the game. They're getting their return on their investment there for sure.
Shadowed Hopkins on 21 of the 28 routes, and he had two catches for 28 yards, seven targets in that time.
Big time. Big time. I mean, you know, they quite arguably have the best defensive lineman and the best secondary player in football in the same damn team.
Right.
Yeah.
Any quarterback comments you want to make about either one of the teams there?
Well, you know, it was Strugglesville there early on. I mean, it was. You know, Strebler, good athlete. I see the talent. He's got a little pop in his arm. Man, that interception pick six was huge.
Wow.
That was the backbreaker. They were kind of in control of the game, and you felt like, okay, this is going to go down to the end, and they have a little momentum, and let's see how this goes. They're in field goal range. Little blitz off the edge, and I just don't know what he was thinking or throwing there to the right.
It was so bad, it was hard to tell.
It was. It's hard to tell. Yeah. It's like, did the receiver run the wrong route? Did he just have a brain fart, or did he just panic? I don't know. But that was the game-changing moment. Wolford, I'll say, after the pick on the first pass play, you know, did some good things. I'm not going to say I'm blown away by what he did, but he showed he can execute the offense. He showed he's a pretty good athlete. Really, his running was the biggest thing he did in the game. Moving the chains, helping them do some things like that. And, you know, after that, you know, first interception, he took care of the ball and threw some good balls here and there. So, not pretty, but the Rams are a run and a defensive football team. Mm-hmm. And if they got to play with Wolford again this week, that's okay. They can beat Seattle Seahawks with John Wolford.
I do
believe that.
I do.
It won't be easy. Mm-hmm. It ain't going to be easy either way. Goff, Wolford, you know, Jim Everett, whatever they want to bring back, it ain't going to be easy.
Right.
But, yes, with the style of play and how they match up with Seattle, I do believe they can do that.
Yeah, Rams-Seahawks, the sandwich game there on Saturday.
Yeah.
4:40 on Saturday afternoon. Okay, Aaron Rodgers and the Packers lock up the number one seed. They beat the Bears 35-16. Did he lock up the MVP?
Of course he did.
Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes,
Josh Allen,
Derrick Henry.
I mean, I do think, you know, of course, all of them deserve to be there in that conversation. I think with the way the year ended, I'd probably go Rodgers 1, Allen 2. I would. I mean, Allen ended the year on fire and making more wow plays maybe than anybody in football. I mean, Derrick Henry, we know how good that was. But when you just talk about consistent greatness, execution, wow factor week in and week out, I think Rodgers was the man this year in football.
He had the caused me to ignore family moments there yesterday because he was 8 for 8, then 9 for 9.
Then 10 for 10.
I'm going to stay here. Yeah. He was 10 for 10.
Right.
And then he would have stayed perfect. He had the perfect post pass thrown, and it was dropped.
Can you believe that?
No.
Can you believe that? Yeah. So we were getting, you know, I knew he was 10 for 10 at half, and I'm going, oh, man, Rodgers on fire. He's got the MVP.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're sitting there, and now we're getting ready. I come back out. I think I got my suit on or whatever, and I look at the screen, and I see that throw.
Yeah.
And someone goes, that was his first incompletion. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
I was like, that was his first throw of the half right there and all that. I mean, that was unbelievable. But Chicago took some chances yesterday.
Yes.
They knew they had to.
Yeah.
With the way Rodgers is playing, they're running the ball. You know, if you remember the first Valdez-Scantling touchdown right up the middle.
That's what I've got in my mind.
It's him versus Denny Trevathan.
Yeah.
Because they're playing a defense where they're going, all right, it's third and short.
Yeah.
We're going to take a chance and we're going to think they're going to throw it short.
Right.
And they kind of played that. They played like, we think you're going to throw slants or crossers over the middle, and Rodgers is almost unstoppable, so we're going to have to do something a little crazy here. And Rodgers is too fucking smart and was like, wait, okay, wait. But that you're man-to-man with him, zoom,
I'll
touchdown.
Take that.
Right.
I think he doesn't get enough credit because he's so gifted and his numbers are so good.
Yeah.
It's easy to talk about the other things, and it's easy to fault the Bears. I think a lot of people are saying, like, how could you put a linebacker on that inside slot receiver? But these things happen, and quarterbacks don't always recognize them.
Exactly.
But defenses get away with it.
Right.
They take those chances because sometimes they get away with it.
They do.
Forget about the talent. He doesn't let the defense get away with
Very
that
rarely.
Decision. Right?
You're right. Very rarely does he let you get away with a I'm going to roll the dice type coverage to where – I might not cover this guy because I don't think you'll really notice it, and I'm doing something so crazy back here that you wouldn't think we would do something like that.
Right.
And you're right. He never misses those opportunities.
I mean, how many times did you have a film session? I'm not, like, pointing at you in your career. I had the same thing in my very pedestrian career. But how many times the next day were you watching and be like, how did I not see that?
I know, right.
Why did I not see that the linebacker was on my best receiver?
Right.
But it happens.
It does.
Just not to him.
It does. Hard. You know, and that's what it takes sometimes to beat those type of teams when they're on fire with that quarterback. Listen, the week before, we talked about Atlanta did that to Kansas City a few times, where I think if they played again, they would tear Atlanta up. But they did some stuff where it's like, wait, they can't bring that blitz and then not cover that guy. That's not sound. That doesn't make sense. My coach never told me a defense would do that. But they roll a dice on a quarterback like that. And, yeah, that happens. But he never misses it. And, you know, honestly, Paul, I've never talked to somebody who has knowledge of Rodgers or been around him who just doesn't awe about his smarts.
Right.
I mean, they're in awe. You know, the thing I hear more times than not about Aaron Rodgers is he's usually the smartest guy in the room.
Yeah.
And I think it shows in the football field, too.
My eyes have gone to when I'm watching them. I mean, I love watching him throw. But the second they break the huddle, I like it when they focus on him because you can see where he's looking and kind of what he's sizing
up. Those big eyes and he's already,
As soon as
dissecting.
That plays out of his mouth, I mean, you know exactly. He's like, okay. What are they doing over there?
No doubt.
Over there? Okay.
He's so comfortable right now.
It's awesome to watch.
Yeah. I think between LaFleur, Nathaniel Hackett, what they've built around him, they've given him answers for everything. They've made him feel good that no matter what the defense does, we got an answer. And, you know, if we don't got an answer, then get to one of your magic audibles and you'll figure it out. And I just think they're in a spot right now, a little bit like Buffalo, where I go, they seem almost unstoppable right now in offense.
Feels that way.
It does. I mean, just between him throwing and the run game and everything, it seems like it's damn hard to stop.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Save big money on everything. Now at Menards. Make quick work of your outdoor cleaning project with Masterforce outdoor and landscaping tools. The 80-volt cordless trimmer is powerful, efficient, and hassle-free. So you spend less time working on your yard and more time enjoying the results. On sale now through May 19th. Check out our wide selection of Masterforce tools and see the rest of our deals on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards. for the world's greatest athletes.
This is the showdown we've been waiting for.
There is nothing like competing on the world's biggest stage.
It's a world record again!
Goal for the United States! Unbelievable!
And when that stage is Paris, anything can happen.
I have never seen anything like this.
How about that?
An Olympics unlike any other.
What a performance!
The Paris Olympics. Friday, July 26th on NBC and Peacock.
Saints defense now is our next damn okay stop. They beat the Panthers 33-7. Five picks?
Yeah, five picks.
Teddy Bridgewater kind of fell off.
No, yeah, Teddy, that's going to be an interesting offseason conversation too about, you know, where does that go? Mm-hmm. Do they want to stand pat with Teddy B? They're going to have a high draft pick. I mean, the Justin Fields conversation could be in play there, I would think.
I'd invest heavily in him as my backup. I would love to have him as my backup.
Exactly.
I don't know if I feel good about trying to win 11, 12 games.
I agree.
With him playing 16.
No, I agree. First off, there's too many moments like we saw yesterday all year with Teddy Bridgewater, I think, where you just go, ooh, the game's good, and, oh, they're keeping pace, and then he makes the big mistake. Mm-hmm. And they were kind of doing that yesterday. You know, the score of this game, very misleading. Carolina moved the ball on them, you know, but then he's got a double post. A lot of the play, like we've shown two double posts on our next-gen stuff today. Double post, and he's got, I believe, Curtis Samuel on the underneath post, but he predetermined it, and he threw the second post, and Malcolm Jenkins is there to intercept it. Then he has another play where he kind of predetermines and thinks he knows the coverage beforehand. I think he thinks he's got man-to-man, and a man-to-man, I got, you know, three receivers to the right. I'm going to have an under route, and the inside of the three is going to run the corner route. He should be open against man-to-man. Well, no, it was a little combination zone pass-off.
Yeah.
And he just throws it up, and it was just an easy interception. I'm excited about Carolina's future. I really am. I think there's a lot of young talent there. Quarterback's going to be something to address, in my opinion. I'm with you there. And the Saints, you know, I know we're not talking about them like Buffalo or Green Bay or the Chiefs right now, but they're still right there. They're right on the edge. I don't feel as good about them as those other three.
Yeah.
But I think they're right off that conversation to where I look at them and their defense and their playmaking ability, and I think Breeze looked pretty damn good yesterday again too. Where I just go, I would be shocked if they're not a major player in the NFC playoffs.
They're kind of flying under the radar.
They really are.
Crazy as a number two seed, but as well as Green Bay is playing, they're getting a lot of respect right now. And then teams below them, the Buccaneers, the Seahawks, are much more discussed and maybe even feared right now than New Orleans.
It does seem that way. You're right. And I mean, again, what they did again yesterday without running backs.
Yeah.
You know, that was okay. We got to play a receiver at running back. You know, early on in the game, Carolina was blitzing them a lot because I think they were like, I don't think this guy knows how to pick up the blitz or all the rules or all that type of stuff. But their offensive line so special. I think that's the one thing that always jumps out to me about the Saints right now. And, you know, they're ready to go. Mm-hmm. I like the Saints football team. I would expect them to beat the Bears this week and make a serious threat to go to the Super Bowl.
And that's the mid-afternoon game, 4:40. Bears and the Saints coming up on Sunday. One more damn okay. And it used to be when we were talking Seattle, it was always Russell Wilson this, Russell Wilson that. Seahawks defense getting highlighted here. They beat the Niners 26-23.
I mean, it's the greatest 180 in football this year, maybe. It went from the first 10 weeks of this team is all offense, all offense, all offense, and the defense sucks, to we've gotten the last 6 or 7 weeks where I go, offense is just okay, and the defense is phenomenal.
Look at this. First 8 games, Chris, 30 points per game. They were 30th in the NFL scoring defense. And we were saying, hey, if they could just get that down in the 20s, somehow they could be really, really good. Last 8 games, 16, best in the NFL. Wow.
I would think they're at the top of the list in just about all statistical categories on the defensive side of the ball the last 5-6 weeks of the year.
Yeah.
I really would. Doing it in a lot of different ways, too. I mean, really, you know, great disguises, you know, great feel for when to take a chance. You know, they've gotten really good at, like, you know, what I call the blitz change thing, where to me this is, you know, this is the best thing I think I see really good defenses do. Just where, hey, it's a lot of people in the line of scrimmage. We end up rushing four, but it looked like we were going to rush six or seven. And, you know, two dropped and two blitzed and doing that to where it's just giving them enough of a schematical advantage, let alone they're healthier. And the addition, you know, Jamal Adams getting better and Carlos Dunlap to where they're dominant. And they have times yesterday where they just whooped the crap out of the 49ers.
Right.
And they're on their offense, on the offensive side of the ball there.
Pete Carroll's a defensive guy, so you know he had a lot to do with that turnaround, going from really the worst to one of the best, if not the best. And NFC Coach of the Year, you look at him, you look at Bruce Arians, how they've come out of the late bye to play so well at the end of the year, and obviously Matt LaFleur. Which one do you like best there in the NFC?
So let's say that again. LaFleur,
so,
who else?
So I've got on this list, LaFleur, Bruce Arians, I think, should be on there because they've come out of that bye week where they were struggling so much in November to be playing their best football right now, and also Pete Carroll. So those three in the NFC.
I got to go with LaFleur. Did you talk about – what did you talk about?
Just NFC.
I'm sorry, I was thinking – I would probably go with LaFleur.
Okay.
I mean, that's a tough one. I mean, they're all awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Ron Rivera could probably be in that damn list
too.
Yeah. I know. It's really, I think, one of the most competitive years ever for Coach of the Year.
Yeah.
I mean, because even if you just think of total, you just go, well, I mean.
We're not even thinking about AFC.
I know, Sean McDermott and Mike Tomlin and all he's done and all that. I'm going to go with LaFleur, though.
Mm-hmm.
I am. LaFleur, to me, is the most underappreciated coach in football. You know,
is that because just Aaron's talent is so good?
I think so. But that's also why, you know, where I want to just go to, like, self-correct everybody a little bit is, like, but remember, this is the thing we're scared of when he was first hired. I was scared. Can he handle Rodgers? Can he handle, you know, the personality, the microscope you're under in Green Bay?
Right. Yeah.
You know, all of those type of things. But I think it's shown you he has tremendous people skills. And he doesn't have too much of an ego. That's the biggest thing to me, where he doesn't have to be like, no, it's my offense. I'm the play caller. He's perfectly fine. Yeah. Fine. Rodgers, give him all the credit. That's cool.
And he has Aaron Rodgers' respect.
And he definitely does.
And
that's half the battle.
Not automatic.
No, you're right. Because I think that he's proven to Rodgers, like we just talked about with the Nathaniel Hackett thing, where they're like, that these guys are fucking smart.
Yeah,
they know ball. So I can learn from something from them, and it makes us a better football team. But LaFleur, I think, is the most underrated, underappreciated 26-6 coach I've ever seen in my life.
26-6.
That's insane.
Right?
It's insane. It really is. And I just can't say enough about him. He deserves a lot of credit. Pete Carroll's phenomenal. He's another guy that, you know, he probably should have won this award a few other times altogether.
Right.
But them getting the defense together. And again, that game was scary yesterday. They were losing 16-6 in the fourth quarter.
It's a heck of a battle.
This is where I worry about them. It's become a little too Russell-centric in Seattle.
It's kind of how they've won the last couple of years, though.
I know, but it's just I don't know if they can get to the Super Bowl that way,
that way
or win the Super Bowl. It can't just be, you know, always about him just buying time and making a play and making the perfect throw on one-on-one coverage. It's just too much for me at times. There's got to be some more there to help the offense and just make it look a little easier. But the defense is phenomenal. And there they were, Paul. I mean, it's six. They finally take the lead 19-16, and the defense and Benson Maiola get to the quarterback, and they make the big play to let the offense score one more time to go up and really end the game right there.
A couple of offensive notes here as we're talking damn okay. DK Metcalf, just over 1,300 receiving yards. Breaks Steve Largent's franchise record.
Yeah.
Tyler Lockett, 100 receptions. That also set a franchise record.
It's a damn good 1-2 combination. I don't know how many yards Lockett ended up with, but they're a great complement to each other just because, you know, one guy's a smaller speed, quickness, can change direction. The other guy, we just split him out and say good luck covering him, and we'll see where it goes from there.
1,054.
Wow.
From Pete.
Man.
One final assist there.
A lot of offense this year in the NFL. A little too much offense for me. I can't lie. Too much offense.
It would be more fun with a little more defense, wouldn't it?
We set records and points. We're seeing 40-plus touchdown passes. I mean, just it was a little too easy this year, no doubt.
Completely agree.
Yeah.
That's going to bring our Monday to a close. We tried to hit kind of jump around and hit the big topics, well, the games that matter the most, as opposed to the normal deep dive on a few games that we would do on a Monday. I tried to keep it all to Sunday, but we did a little peeking ahead.
That's all right. That was good. We got to. That's what's coming up.
To right now.
Yeah, and that's what we're going to continue to do. We're going to figure out what we'll do for the Wednesday podcast. So I'm going to do some deep dives into these games, especially the teams that are playoff bound, just to break down some things I like or didn't like and start to look at some interesting angles about the matchups coming up Sunday. I think that's where we should go. If you're listening to Chris Sims Unbuttoned, send in the questions. That's all I'm going to start doing. Tomorrow, we'll get done with Pro Football Talk. I'm going to sit down, start watching film and breaking down these matchups.
I might send one in too.
Yeah, cool. Please do. Please do. And tell me, you know, that I don't know this or you won't get this trivia or blah, blah, blah. But either way, we are there. Playoffs, baby. Week 17. Happy New Year to everybody out there. Pauly B.
Good to see you.
You the man. Thanks for coming in. I know you had a long week. Lots of work.
All good. Want
to
be.
You're a grinder.
It's a good thing to be.
A grinder. All right. Peace out, everybody. Have a good week. We'll talk to you Wednesday.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Save big money on protecting your garden now at Menards. Messina's Animal Stopper is a liquid repellent that prevents pesky animals from damaging your garden. Available in a convenient, ready-to-use bottle. It lasts for up to 30 days, regardless of weather and watering. Save big money on Messina's Animal Stopper at Menards. And check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now. Save big money.